On to our next guest, Kate Hunter, who is an actor who is doing a show at 45 Downstairs called Earshot. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks, Neil. Hi, and hi, Fiona.
Hi. Thank you for coming in on a sunny Sunday.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day out there.
It is. But you've been busy in the basement of 45 Downstairs.
Beavering away.
What a great venue.
It's a fantastic venue. And, you know, it's a venue that is unlike really any other venue that we have in Melbourne, I think. It's partly because of the kind, you know, the kind of venue it is, but also the opportunities that it offers for independent artists like myself who are, you know, making work without the support of, you know, a small company, for example.
And that, I think that's what we find from interviewing various people who have been at 45 Downstairs, that it is, they do encourage a lot of, obviously, you know, a lot of independent or people who do their own self, you know, shows to go out there and to produce it and to present it.
And it's, you know, there, as I said, I can't really think. I mean, I guess La Mama is another comparison. But I think, you know, certainly 45 has a very particular kind of quality to it, and you know, they have a great reputation for making for producing work.
Well,
that's
every single time
really
I've been
high quality.
Every time I've been to a show at 45, it's a completely different space.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love what, you know, the blank canvas that the space
is. Yeah,
and
it's very versatile.
I just sometimes have seen some shows that I'm like, I can't believe they fit all that in and the audience at the same time.
Yeah.
So you can move it around and every show is really different. But we're not here to talk about every other show. We're here to talk
about Earshot.
And Earshot, now, it's a solo performance?
Well, actually, no. It's a performance for two actors, an electroacoustic musician, and about 150 metres of grey water hose, among other things. So myself and another actor, Josephine Lang, are the two live bodies on stage.
Right.
And then we have an amazing knob twiddler called Jem Savage, and that's not a euphemism, who is kind of making manifest these incredible overheard eavesdropped conversations that I have collected, gathered, and otherwise stolen from the general public over the last, well, several years, in fact. So it's a performance that is about and is based on and is made up of eavesdropped conversations.
And then, of course, when you take those out of context, they just sort of form and go into whole new shapes and formats.
Absolutely. And we're really interested in that. I mean, I am very curious about language and generally. And there's something about, I think, you know, what I've called this show a symphony of the authentic voice, and that's partly because there's something about, you know, when you're listening to people who are speaking without any sense that someone else is kind of listening in that way, you know, the language is almost musical, and then when it's reworked through through a performer, it's kind of, when it's mediated through the wonderful medium of performance, then it's kind of made larger than life. So it's a symphony of the great unwashed, the Australian vernacular. It's very, very funny. It's also, you know, there are moments that are quite potent and intense as well.
I can imagine. And of course, exploring the Australian vernacular, it would be a very interesting subject because you have not only, you know, you have a more original form, you have the new words that are coming through and the new modes of expression.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I can imagine that blending that, I mean, the words that my, you know, your grandmother used and the words that your, you know,
absolutely,
your children's, teenage children used.
And I think, you know, the thing about this work is you know, there's the language as it is spoken, and then we're kind of experimenting with different ways of presenting and you know, layering language and storytelling. So we work with technology as well as ourselves. And there's a kind of a really writerly approach to how we play with and investigate the stories. But I think, you know, it's important to remember too that whenever I talk to people about this work, you know, they always say, oh, you know, I was in the train the other day and there was someone on the phone and they were, you know, they were breaking up with their boyfriend and they didn't, you know, and they, what they said in the public domain was really quite unbelievable. Mm. So I think what's important to remember too is that these are conversations that we've all, you know, we all have done this. We all eavesdrop, whether we want to or not.
Mm.
And so there's a kind of a sense of, I suppose, a sense that, you know, there's a real humanity in the work, which is what one of the things I really love about it.
I think that when talking about eavesdropping as such, I suppose, whether you mean to or you don't, like you said, it's right there in front of you.
Yeah.
And I think this day... Well, now I sound like a really old man, but this day and age of the mobile phone, I think people must just, I think once they get on the phone, they just assume that they're in a conversation with that person on the other end and not realise that they've got a tram full of people or a train full of people.
This is exactly right.
And they will talk about any and everything that they want to without realising that there's
quite
people
quite intimately, in fact, you know.
Exactly.
They're medical operations.
Yes.
I think this is you know, this is the thing that, you know, the advent of technologies and mobile technologies and the way they're shifting over time.
It's also depending on the cultural environment of where you are. I mean, in Japan, no one talks on the phone at all.
Isn't that amazing? I noticed that as well.
And it's really fabulous.
Yeah.
But of course, I mean, that's obviously, you know, there's a massive cultural change, a difference there, and there are signs on there that says, you know, don't talk on your phone. They're all on their phone, but they don't talk on
the
phone.
It's a very, very quiet country, as opposed to somewhere like New York, which is where quite a bit of my material has been gathered, because everybody shouts all the time. Everywhere.
Yes.
And shares everything.
So it's kind of interesting, you know, there's all sorts of cultural considerations as well with the work in terms of where it's been gathered and how it's been construed and manipulated and amended and, you know, otherwise interfered with.
Well, we do have that very fabulous local cartoonist who is well known for his eavesdropping work.
Yes, who does the overheard cartoon.
Oslo Davis,
yeah.
Yeah, and that certainly is a very humorous way of reimagining a conversation out of context.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, Kate, what we've done is we've totally jumped the format of the show.
We have, but actually what we normally talk about is where you started. How you got involved in the arts and your love for arts. But before we do that, we'll be back. We'll continue this discussion shortly.
While we take a dad break.
I'll do some deep breathing.
Exactly. You're here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine. So, Kate, let's go back to, like I said, when you started. How did you start in the arts?
The olden days when dinosaurs were roaming the earth.
I might have been around at the time too. So,
theatrical career.
Now, what brought you into the arts, or what attracted you to the arts?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't know. I've always been a performer of sorts from a very early age. And I have had, you know, I've sort of undertaken a range of different trainings over the years, did some training at the National Theatre and then did quite a bit of training overseas with various people. Look, it's just something that I've always...
There was never any question.
No, not really. I mean, I wasn't really encouraged by my family, but I just kind of forged ahead anyway. I was always told I needed to have something to fall back on.
So was it acting that got you started, or, you know, did you want to get into, you know, into acting at all, or just theatre in general, or did you?
Yes, I started as an actor, and then I guess over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, I've been making my own work. Or maybe even longer than that. I've been making my own work, so I've been a theatre maker. So I've found that that whole process of, you know, getting auditioning and being on Neighbours is has not. You know, I'm much more someone who's curious about questions and themes and ideas that I can kind of manifest myself. I have a real theatre maker, performance maker approach to my work. And that's, I think, come from exploring a range of different, as I said before, a range of different trainings, a lot of physical theatre performance training. And then, you know, I did some further study. I did some performance. I did an honours year, and then I did a PhD.
Well, that was obviously there was enough interest there for you to follow that part. So, where did you study here in Victoria? Was it?
Yeah. I've done a lot of things. I've done quite a few degrees. So I do have an undergraduate degree that's a double major in criminology, but I don't tell many people that, although I have just told a whole lot of people that. And I went back and did an honours year in performance studies, and then I fast-tracked, to a PhD a few years ago, and that was a practice-led research degree. So I was able to make a live performance as part of my work, and that really shifted my... That was a pretty dynamic process, actually. It really shifted my approach to my own work.
And I don't mean to just go past that very quickly, but the criminology, that just interested me a little bit. I mean, was there any reason for that?
That was because my parents told me that I had to have something to fall back on.
Oh, so that was a fallback position.
But you don't have to do that, folks.
What sort of job was a criminologist going to get?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to ask them.
Did you develop at that point your interest in neuroscientific concepts?
The neuroscience kind of came in when I was doing my doctoral studies, and that's so I became very interested in the process of, the creative process and memory. I was particularly interested in memory and what happens in the brain when memories occur. And at the same time, I was making a work that was about that. And my mother was also had dementia at that time. Mm. And so there were kind of a series of experiences that were going on that kind of meant that there was this confluence of questions around how do we think, how do we remember, and how we remember affect the kind of person that we are? What are the stories that we tell ourselves? And one of the things that came out of that whole process, this was when I was doing my PhD, was I started to want to document my rehearsal process, and I couldn't stand using a video camera because I just thought my bum looked enormous. So
she doesn't have a big bum at all.
No, not quite sure what she's talking about.
Anyway, that's just, you know how it is. And so I started to set myself instructions using an audio recorder, and that took me into this whole world of recording my own self, speaking to myself, and kind of launched me into my particularly sort of slightly curious take on verbatim theatre. And so in a way, Earshot, you know, I'm still using verbatim because we have recorded ourselves speaking, and some of the work that we use is we're listening to ourselves as we speak. So there's a really interesting process of re-speaking what you hear in verbatim theatre that I'm really curious about in terms of enlivening the performance experience. But, yes, when I was doing that work around neuroscience and memory and listening and remembering, that was where this beginning of using an audio recorder rather than a video. It was a pragmatic question of documenting my work and how to do it.
Wonderful thing about audio recordings is, I mean, first of all, you have to overcome the fear of your own voice, which is a big one.
Yes, we all know about that one, don't we?
isn't that interesting?
When I first recorded myself as a young child on a very dinky little tape deck that my aunt had brought back from China or Hong Kong, I just couldn't make myself feel that voice on that recording was actually me.
Well, that's because you don't hear your voice as others hear it, because you're hearing it resonating in your skull and through all your your nasal resonators and everything. So you don't hear it authentically. Which is kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you mentioned because I did learn that as well in school, but it still didn't stop you from feeling very awkward and weird when you hear your own voice. Now, there is a reason behind it, but you still think to yourself, oh, my God, do I really sound like that?
And it's very personal, isn't it, your voice?
It is.
I mean, I really I sort of have a very interesting take on that too, because I sort of hate my voice as well, but weirdly and interestingly, I've sort of gone towards it more. And what's great about working with someone like Jem is he can do all sorts of things to make it sound better. But we also, because we work in the show, we work with we're mic'd up, and so there's something about being able to really work softly, you know, to really work with the dynamic of the voice much more, you know, across a greater spectrum of dynamic when you've got a microphone.
So with Earshot and the various different conversations that you've tuned into, and now you're, you know, sharing with the audience, I mean, aspects of those must be very banal. And is it because you're bringing it to light that it's not necessarily about highlighting the banal, but actually, you know, bringing import to how somebody was feeling at that particular time?
That's a great question, Fiona, because I think, I mean, the stories are pretty interesting in a way. I mean, I've had a huge amount of material, and I've had to really select and refine. And then I've sort of written into and crafted some of it. I have some of it. I haven't. Some of it's completely verbatim because it's so amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are just incredibly florid and articulate when they're mouthing off or really drunk. But some of it is more about, I guess, the, as I said earlier, and your question implies, this sort of enlivening through performance. So, you know, we get this kind of this range from you know, stories that are very small and personal, or they might just be moments, or they are really, you know, kind of monumental, devastating ones. So there's a kind of a range, but I think it is something that audiences feel connected to, because they're kind of universal. They're universal stories that you're hearing.
And of course, you're using a whole lot of interesting bits and pieces in the show.
We are indeed. We're using you know, I'm really interested in language and translation and channeling and funneling and Chinese whispers, and I think this work all kind of evokes those kind of themes. So we're working with as I said, large amounts of grey water hose, which can allow the voice to travel from a very long distance through to the audience, and funnels, the old tin can, which I think, you know, for those younger listeners might not know the experience of piercing a hole in a tin can, in two tin cans, and joining it up with a piece of string, the olden day telephone.
So much fun when you're a kid.
So much fun.
What a discovery.
And it works. Yeah. Like, it really works. So we work with tin cans. And then there, you know, there are some other electrical instruments. So all of these everyday objects are reworked to, you know, evoke, different ways of speaking, of audio delivery, of playing vocally. You know, the soundscape of the piece is really, it's a third partner, really. It's a three-hander. So some of them we're just kind of working with as they are, and some of them we're sort of layering digital kind of effects on them. So it's a really interesting work formally, I think, as well as content.
It sounds exciting. How long have you been working on this show?
Oh, God. Well, we had a development at the beginning of last year in 2016, which was really wonderful. We were supported by Theatre Works, and Fantastic. We were able to present it at the Festival of Live Art after a development that was also supported by the City of Yarra. So we got some support around that, and the development was really successful. You know, there were a series of things that we did that were just pragmatic, like I didn't want to learn lines, and so we used a lot of music stands for our scripts, and that has become a formal part of the show. Mm-hmm. It's like a recital. So that happened last year, and then I was lucky to get some more funding to to support this presentation. So we've rehearsed it. We've been rehearsing over the last, you know, month or two. But I think about it a lot.
And you've been collecting material.
And I've been collecting material for, you know, ever.
When you're collecting material, are you writing it down or are you recording?
Well, I write it down mostly. I don't know how legal it is to record. So,
well, maybe your criminology degree, you know, background might be able to remember that one.
I mean, you know, this is part of the thing about this work is there's ethical questions about it, I think. Mm. Not necessarily legal, but ethical and moral questions about where is the line between what is the public domain and what is not.
That's right.
And I think that's really shifting, as you were saying earlier, Neil, about, you know, the advent of mobile technology. So, you know, where is the public domain in your backyard when you're listening over the fence to your neighbour who's screaming at the dog?
So does this show, do you think, will that provide you with some thought or some answers to that?
I don't think it provides you with answers, but I certainly think it's provocative in terms of the content, some of the content.
So, and this is your show, Earshot, that you've got at the moment. Where is it showing? Or where are you performing it?
At 45 Downstairs, which is 45 Flinders Lane, Melbourne.
And when is it on?
It opens this Wednesday, the 29th, I think, of November.
That might be right.
That's the preview. Opening night is Thursday, and it goes through till the Sunday, the 3rd of December. So there's only six shows.
It's a very short run.
It's a short but fantastic run.
So absolutely. People should, if you're interested in that, you should go out and check out the website. It should be on 45 Downstairs website.
It's on 45 Downstairs website. Okay. I should just also remind people there's a question and answer session after the Saturday matinee at 4:30 p.m. If you're interested in, I don't know, coming along and hearing about the making of the work or having a discussion about the ethics.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Kate, and telling us about this show.
So you're welcome.
Good luck with that.
Thanks.
So, Kate Hunter, thank you, and go see your show, Earshot, at 45 Downstairs. You're here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.